could use discussion afterwards.
But right, that's usually how we
Yeah, like that's...
Okay. Oh. Okay. Good evening. Well, welcome to everyone who came. It's really a big covered day. I don't know if the Rashid is aware of this. We put this out. We have a list of mental health professionals which we've gathered over the year. Mavakshi Hashem, people who are coming to Shiurim. So this is a testament to the Rashid's reputation that within an hour, 35 people had already had said they would like to join us this evening. I'm looking around here. It's not just local people. There's many people came in both from the men's side and the women's side, from Muncie, Lakewood, real around the tri-state area, who came to hear the Baruch Hashem from the Yeshiva. On a personal note, Hugh probably doesn't remember. I was at Conway, I went through Yeshiva's Kavurus, when she was in the mirror. She was an agent by Rebbeinu Shvinkel. So he was known then, this is 25 years ago, as a tremendous Baal Machshava. And we went every Motzei Shabbos. I didn't have a chance to say goodbye. The last was I had a Purim suit in the house 25 years ago. Then I went back to America. And then I became a chassan and got married. And she went to Silver Spring. I didn't say hello since then. So I want to thank you for the Purim suit of Chavurus. So we're going to do the format. People had submitted some questions. We're going to read those questions, give the Yeshiva a chance to respond, and feel free to any follow-up questions, discussion points. We'll see how far we get from those questions. And if there's time at the end, Yeshiva seems comfortable just to take any questions from the floor, but we're going to start with that, which was submitted first.
Right.
Yeshiva's okay with recording. Do not be mefarsim until Yeshiva gives reshus that there's nothing there that for personal use it's fine. We don't want to have anything censored, so to feel free to talk. So we're going to start with, can Yeshiva offer a general framework on the Torah perspective on mental health and on the role and responsibility of the clinician?
So first of all, good evening. I'm really glad to be here. I think it's something that's necessary. I've been waiting to develop in the Torah community. First of all, I feel here like I'm at a psychologist anonymous meeting. The setup and the surreptitious figure sneaking in and it had that kind of aura to it. A person that I was zocher to have a kirva very late late in his life, and I unfortunately didn't have a longer shaychus, was Reb Zelig Epstein. I'm sure you've heard the name. When I came to America, my brother Reb Nosson Zvi said he should be your guiding light, your Das Torah, and I found him to be extremely, extremely broad, deep. From both the Torah perspective and what was happening around the world, I don't think I've ever met someone like him. He's an extraordinary person. And psychology came up a few times. There was once an issur on psychology 20-some-odd years ago that people forgot, and things of that nature. And I asked him about a particular case. I was involved in some sort of case. And I asked him, or my wife asked him actually, what would have happened in Europe? So he said, how come nobody ever heard of these problems or whatever? And he said, in Europe, these people just fell off the map. And, it wasn't as if they could, I think they just forgot about them. The person left and that was the end of it. And he said, we live in a tougher world today, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a lot more chachma of understanding people and insights than we had before. And we need to use it. That was his words to me, and I feel very strongly about it. Maybe I'll sort of jump some of the questions. I want to sketch out a certain framework that I think is very helpful. There seems many times to be a collision course between Rabbanim of all different types and mental health professionals. And I'd like to try a little bit to sketch out what I think is if we would define properly the perimeter of each, the role of each one, I think it'll be very helpful. A person consists of different layers. The Sfar, this is a medrash, and the Sfarim speak a lot about this language, and I will enumerate four layers. There's guf, there's nefesh, there is ruach, and there is neshama. The Medrash says there are five parts to the neshama. There are two more that are entirely irrelevant to this discussion, but the guf plus these three are very relevant. And each one has its own tchum, and it belongs in a very specific place and needs to be dealt with at what junction are we talking about. A person, Rahmana Tzlan, starts acting very erratically. A person steals. A person starts acting improperly with women, whatever it is. And we discover a brain tumor. So that belongs in a doctor's office, a neurosurgeon, an oncologist. It has nothing to do with a rav, or very little. Well, maybe we'll add something, but right now, this is an issue of the brain physically, the guf of the person physically creating havoc. And it needs to be dealt that way. The same is true chemical. If a person is drunk, highly drunk, reasoning is not going to help much. He needs to be not drunk. And the only thing that will help is get the alcohol out of his system, and so on. That's one level. And I think that, Baruch Hashem, we have a fairly good sense of it. There's another level, and it's called nefesh. Nefesh is a life force, a driving force of life that man shares with an animal. And that's why behemoths are, the word nefesh applies to behemoth. And the Ramban, for instance, points out, animals have emotions, simple emotions. A dog can have affection, loyalty, anger. You can see a low level of emotion. And that belongs to a part of a person called nefesh. And that ought to be, or that is the domain of mental health professionals in whatever capacity you would like to call it, whatever you'd like to call it. And then there is ruach, which is the place where a person has bechira. A ruach is something which is in flux. By definition, a wind can't be stationary. It's in flux by definition. The part of the person that has bechira and is choosing moral right or wrong, that is the part of the person that's called ruach. And that belongs to Torah, and it belongs to Torah professionals. Finally, neshama is an input of good into a person, which we basically don't have in its full form, bizman hazeh, but it's something, it's an input into a person's mind, which is a good beyond this world of a different nature. So, again, we have four areas we can identify in a person. Guf affects a person's behavior, and that is medical profession. Nefesh affects a person's behavior, and that's mental health profession. Neshama, ruach, is the person's moral ability to decide, the realm that we would call free will, free choice, moral values, and that's the tchum, that's the tchum of Torah. And neshama is an influx of good in a person, that's siyata shmaya, beyond what we would consider even bechira, and so on. Important to remember is that each one of these areas has its own professional. And just like a rav cannot say on Yom Kippur whether a patient should fast or not, a rav can say if he should fast based on what the doctor says. So if the doctor tells him there's a 5% of chance he'll die, the Rav has to make a halachic decision what to do. If the doctor says there's no chance he'll live, no chance he'll die, then the Rav makes a decision. But the factual, establishing the facts, that's the area of the doctor. The same thing to and a more subtle degree is in the area of nefesh. A person whose functioning, his behavior is impaired, not because of moral indecisions, values, etc., but because of very strong layers of emotional stress of one kind or another, we'll have to deal with that first. And then, now, once you present the facts, you might say, a Rav might pass, given those facts, this is still right or wrong to do halachically. But it requires laying out facts. And then there is the area of moral values, right and wrong in a very, very absolute way, which is a Torah value. So understanding each person's place role is very important. One more point about this that people get confused, and I think it's important to dispel this point. People say in Torah you have everything. It's true, except there's nobody who knows Torah at that level. Maybe the last person was the Vilna Gaon, or if you see them do the Baal Shem Tov, it's fine, but that's it. No one can open up a Chumash and explain biology. Nobody can open up a Chumash and explain much of mental health. Our posterity, sometimes the Gemara uses an expression, had I not lifted up a Cheres, you wouldn't have found a jewel. Sometimes scientists make a discovery and say, wow, that's what it said in the Torah. Correct. But the other way around, to say that somebody can sit and use the Torah or Gemara as a textbook for that, he's taking for himself the position occupied by nobody in our Doros. And therefore, the fact that a particular Rav may or may not know about biology doesn't make him less of a Rav. But it means just this, the equation of, since Torah has everything, so it has all the biology of human beings, so if a Rav knows Torah, he knows everything about the biology of human being, is fallacious, because there is no such Rav, not today, not yesterday, maybe the Vilna Gaon, and who knows how many in the Doros, you know, until we go back to Tanoim and Amoraim. Those are points that I felt, certainly as introduction for some of the points made here, I'd like to put it down. Any comments or questions about this, and then we can go with some of the other points. You want to call on? I don't know. Who's on good behavior? Who's bad behavior? You. Who's paying dues and who not? Okay.
She's in charge, but you could delegate.
Okay, fine. But whatever. I'm delegating to you.
Nefesh, I mean, between all these layers, they all impact each other, right?
So yes.
There's a flow back and forth.
Correct.
And there's definitely overlap, and I don't know how you can even tease apart where the source of an issue is. So where does that leave us in terms of, you know, we separated, the Rashiva separated into professionals, but we deal a lot with people on, there are multiple layers.
Correct.
Right,
so it requires Rabbanim who have a sense of mental health, and mental health professionals who have a sense of Torah. And yes, because a lot of times for instance, a child is misbehaving terribly, or an adult, and the question is, we're dealing with an isser, with something, with behavior that is totally, totally unacceptable. On the other hand, there are mental health factors. They will have to work together. And yes, that is a trick. But understanding, I was speaking to somebody recently, I'll cover many facts. I don't think anybody would know them anyway. But this person is a Rav of some sort, young. This person is bright and many qualities. This person is a Rebbe somewhere, and he's doing Kol Davar Asa. Not in his class, so not abuse, not sexual abuse, but he's living what they call in Yiddish a Chazer Shetag. And in his description, you know, he does Kol Davar Asa, and he walks in class on that. This person was speaking to me. I mean, he got to me tangentially, and and he's so he's done tshuva many times. Tshuva, what could tshuva? I told him, you're barking up the wrong tree. Your behavior is addictive. You've been in this for 15 years, gambling and womenizing. The question is not, did you say Yalav Yavar this morning? You have something you cannot deal with. I said, you first have to deal with what got you to where you got, how to undo the mechanism, how to replace the mechanism, because you've got nothing else in your life giving you any pleasure. And then, once we're settled on bedrock, we can deal with the next stage. Yes, there's a... But understand that to the least, you know, that's what I told him. I said, we're going to need to find somebody that can deal with this part of it, and then we have to do this part. Don't confuse the two. This is not a tshuva issue anymore. This is a mental health issue at this point. And there will be a lot of times it'll be complex. You know, yes. Could you maybe just identify yourself if it's not an...
I found that there's really a dearth of effective marriage counseling out there in the field of psychology. There are a few well-known, yeah, but for the most part, there really isn't enough effective marriage counseling. I'm wondering if people agree with me about that. And I found that just using what I, as a little Beisapo graduate, understand from the Torah has so much wisdom and so much clarity in terms of marriage counseling. And I find that when I tell my clients some of the things that I have learned or studied from Yiddishkeit, I find that they're gaining, you know, they're really gaining from it. So I'm wondering if that applies to where you have couples counseling and psychology really doesn't have great solutions for us. And if we use the Torah, you know,
So you are sitting and working with people. You are sitting and getting feedback and an intuitive sense of a field, and you also learn Torah. So in a certain sense, it's the same process I described. The reality is sort of, you know, you're seeing things and then you're able to identify it. But if imagine somebody who never dealt with couple counseling, never even dealt with serious, and someone would come and ask him and he would give a Torah answer, he would probably be off mark because he doesn't understand the problem. It's what the process that does work is when you look and you say, you know, they need to be able to understand X, Y, Z, you say, wow, but that's what the Torah said. That's perfectly legitimate. But somebody who is not in the field meaning experiencing it, dealing with it, getting feedback, seeing what works, what doesn't work, and that picture, I don't believe that person can be very effective.
So they need Torah knowledge plus.
There's an expression the Gemara says, the Gemara uses in the following context. Somebody said halacha, and they said, well, that's a Mishnah, because if you think about it, that's what the Mishnah is saying. And he got angry at him and he said, had I not picked up the rock, you wouldn't have discovered the diamond underneath it. So you're dealing with people and you see that, and all of a sudden, the Pasik, the Rashi, whatever it is, does in mind. But that's a process because you're dealing in two worlds together. Yes?
As a real tzucker, where does all the Musar and human insight, the human insight part of Torah, which is the Makshava, which is borderline between Nefesh and Ruach, so where does that come in? Because a lot of insight that's directing, discussing human emotion, motivation, and meeting human needs. And where would that fall? And I think there's a tax for the confusion when the mashkiach, not necessarily the rav, but the mashkiach is becoming the therapist.
So ideally, the mashkiach, so let's deal a second with the ruach part. So here I'm dealing with somebody, and Rav Volba actually writes, Rav Volba was, interestingly enough, a big Baal Musa. He also was a Baal Tshuva, even though they sort of played it down. I mean, a Baal Tshuva, the real thing. He was fry until he was 20 years old. His father was Reform. He studied university. And psychology was a field he's very into. He then became Ruach as a Talmud and was awed by his presence. But he does, and he has in his second volume about Vadim, he does have one chapter on this, and he says basically, if you're lacking in Tsuras Adam, then please don't start working on Musa. If a person has a serious anger management problem, it's not working on Kas. It's Kas and it's... Musa comes in the following. Musa is to take a normal human being and make into something better. So for instance, let's say somebody did something wrong and you're able to rise above anger that's justified, and you're able to rise above jealousy that's justified because something higher, that's the stage at which a mashgiach figure, rav figure, is supposed to be at his best. Now, there were rabbanim like the Chazon Ish who had keen medical insight in two areas specifically. Chazon Ish, anatomy was his forte, and I think, for those who are familiar with learning, he was able to see something from all sides, and that's why the stories about the Chazon Ish in medical area focused around surgery, planned surgeries, how to do it, and so on, because he had a tremendous sense that was specific to him, and a sense of the psychology of the doctors. What do they mean? What do they want? Who has some self-interest? Those were the two areas that he was known for. No one has those stories about the Brisker Rav. Brisker Rav was not even smaller than Chazon Ish. It didn't take away from it. So in the world of Mashgichim, you have people that are just good at guiding you from the normal to the above normal, to the Atav V'Chartanu part, which we call the Ruach part. And there was some that same type of insight allow them to extrapolate to the nefesh part. There's always, whenever you go out of your zone, you always have to be doubly sure that you really know what you're dealing with. I mean, both mental health professionals, rabbanim, share a common challenge. People come to you in difficult circumstances, and they trust you way beyond what a human being should be trusted with. That is, a person, when a person needs to say, I'm not thinking straight, I'm not making right decisions, I'm giving over my decision-making process to somebody. It's an extraordinary, it's like when you have somebody, needs to fix your computer, and you tell him the password, and he's sitting someplace else, and he's playing around with your computer. It's very scary to watch. But that level of trust is extraordinary in terms of what it can do, and extraordinary how destructive. All the stories you hear, the difficult stories, are based on that. So a Rav needs to be able to say to himself, Ad Kan, this is my profession. This is what I think I have a feel for, and gingerly I think I can manage this. This is out of my area, and whatever opinions I have, I keep to myself, and I send you off to somebody else. My role as a Rav is to find the person that I've seen succeeded and help you make that decision.
Not just again with the Rashida's position, but two scenarios. Someone comes to me and says, I finally had enough courage to eat a cheeseburger and to find somebody who used to father and beat me up and go to show. Someone comes and says, he wants me to applaud the fact that he was finally overcome his social anxiety to join the Shmuz and drink Kriya Satara. Does this fit into
it? It does. And let me,
I want to hear the question.
You repeat it. You want to repeat it?
The question was someone who described to a therapist that he was finally able to overcome a social anxiety and schmooze during Kriya Satara. So I guess how does that fit in with this model of...
Or cheeseburger. All right. So this segues to another question. When you, as a professional, and mental health, a worldview, Weltanschauung, would have one approach, and you, as a Frommer Yid, would have another approach. So let's move it into neutral ground, and let's get a sense of how we deal with it. Imagine, as a mental health professional, you're dealing with somebody who's father's beat him up terribly. He's become meek, unassertive, he's reacted by becoming basically totally inept and so on. And then he comes and says, I finally got up my courage. I stole a few $1,000 out of my father's pocket. And if he comes after me, I'm going to kill him. I finally have that courage. Thank you. So the first thing is to bill him for whatever he hasn't paid up until now. That I think that would be the first thing. So in a normal, and I would think it also true in a Torah way. You tell the person, and this is a position that I do a lot of times, we have people who've gotten courage together, you say, okay, Baruch Hashem, you finally have the courage to do. Now, what do you really want to do? And how much do you really want to live your life to spit in somebody's face? Why don't you decide if your father wouldn't be here, what would you be doing? In other words, what you're trying to do is pat the person on the back for his quote-unquote courage and say, okay, but now that you're free to choose, how are we going to choose what's right and what's wrong? The delicate part here is, and this is a professional issue, how much can we allow our Torah shkafa to work together with mental health? At worst case scenario, a person has an obligation to say, I cannot help you from this point onwards. You can dress it up and say, I'm afraid that I'm too biased by my opinion, I wouldn't be the right person, and slip out. It halachically, to be misailed by Avera is aser. But in that situation, you can say, you know, I hear your anger, and it must be feel liberating to be that way. And now that you have that courage, let's ask ourselves, what do we want to do with it? Why a cheeseburger doesn't taste that great? So it's really because you want to feel empowered. You'd need to be able to segue whatever he did into something constructive, not different than the guy who had enough courage to steal a few $1,000 from his father and is willing to kill him. Yeah. I mean, so a follow-up question.
I think everyone's thinking that psychology would say this. I don't know.
So
your values in the system, and the guy says, I'm fucking coming out of my anger, and I like cheeseburgers, and you're imposing your religion on me.
We impose our religion on our children because we think it's right. The idea that there's no right and wrongs, this is an area, and I guess we can talk about psychology a minute. Psychology, like you all know much better than me, is really a mixture of a lot of things. It's facts, that data that has been collected. It is reasonable theories, very specific ones. It is more general theories about human behavior. And there's a value system no matter what. Because if somebody comes to me and says that I'm the third reincarnation of Jesus, Muhammad, or name it, whoever you want. So it used to be thought, this is terrible, this guy's a raving machine, we have to make it normal. The philosophy of psychology now says, who cares? He's not hurting anybody, he's not hurting himself, so what's the problem? That's already a value judgment. We as from Yidden don't buy into the value judgment. So just like if somebody became a thief, to feel that you can just pat him on his back and say, wonderful, because we recognize, almost every normal person recognizes that stealing is being wrong, we would have to find a way to say it. We're from a Yidden at the end of the day. And that piece of psychology is where they've got to move away, and not us. Yeah.
So she was discussing really the therapist whose realm is based on demarcation.
Yes.
Nefesh, you know, entering into Ruach territory, and the question is, you know, from a professional standpoint, curious more from a terrorist standpoint. Does she feel the therapist has a right to go there, or what factors they need, you know, to, they're obviously not trained in Rabbanus or to be a Mashkiach. Can one trust their own knowledge, clinical intuition to dabble in areas of Ruach, morality, to quote Torah sources? Do they need, you know, what variables would go into that to, that's not their training.
Right. So, let's take it on a technical level. For instance, how to memorize information. So if I will, let me give you some tips on how to learn more effectively, efficiently, and memorize better. Let me give you some tips on how to get along with people, how to recognize what people want from you. So for instance, a person who's socially inept and doesn't get clues, or a person who's always on people's nerves and vice versa. So the Bein Olam HaVeiro dictates that you help him find the right the right way of interacting with people. Using Divrei Torah in a general way, yes, it's nice, but a person needs to stop short of... I'm weary when you constantly start using psukim, because psukim can be used in many ways, and I'm much more comfortable with somebody whose approach is factual and sort of secular than a person who's selling me that this is Torah. I'm weary because secular things are supposed to be based on fact, proving repeatable experimentation, etc. Torah is interpretation, and that's why I'm a little more wary. I'd rather deal with something that's secular and professional than something that's Hamish. That's my personal sense of it. So it's nice, again, when you find things. Someone told me, this person is a therapist in Lakewood, he deals with OCD problems, and he's been collecting Chazal, and he shared them with me, and I thought it was amazing. You know, one of the issues of OCD is, you know, from OCD, is how do you distinguish between a brisk machmir and an OCD who needs help? No, some people don't, but in assuming that it is, how is it? And this person said, this person deals with it a lot, and he's very, I've known him personal level, he's very, very, you know, he's a bardas, and he said, there are two mishnas with the following statement. There's a question. A person has put out his chametz. After bedikas chametz, it's in a corner. Does he have to worry that a cat came and took it over to the other place? You know, there's always... So the Mishnah says no. She'im kein ein ledav asof. Because then there's no end to it. So you'll never finish bedikas chametz. Because there's always... it says a kohen gadol is supposed to prepare... You know, he's supposed to have a wife to prepare another wife in case the wife dies. And the Mishnah says, "Ein ledav asof." So he said, any behavior that can't define a stopping point is OCD. Halacha does not want behavior that is ein ledav asof. So if you clearly define, I'm being choishes for Ram Shita, and therefore I'm doing this and this, it's clearly defined. So that chumra may be coming from a good place, not, but it's a valid halacha chumra. But if a person is constantly, he's just never sure if his guf is naki, if he's never sure if this, never sure that, if there's no clear stopping place where it's a very clear, yes, this is a goal that I've attained, it belongs to a different realm and it's not halacha. That I thought was a very insightful point. But again, you've got to be very careful. And that's why I tend to have, personally, reluctance, you know, when you automatically try to match up things.
If the person is coming in, they're inclined with skepticism on the mental health profession, and one is using terror just to make them feel comfortable and
build trust.
Really build trust and show that some of these ideas are rooted in terror, does she feel the same way? That he's, you know,
I would say maybe the vocabulary. In other words, when you use, for somebody who's not, you know, he's not in that world, and you use very secular terms, some people are kind of, like you said, frightened, turned off by it. If you couch it in terms, you know, that are more easy to the person, it's his language, that I think would be helpful. And just wary, because what do you do? He'll come back with a different pshat that he found a different sefer. You know, ein ledav asof. You know, it's you know, there's a veritlach from every rebbe, and there's and you know, and so on and so forth. So I would like him to understand some different turf, but at least make the turf. You know, it's like lehavdil, not lehavdil, exactly the same way. In pediatric hospitals, the rooms don't look like hospital rooms; they look like kindergarten rooms. You know, that's the, you know, because you want the kid to it's you know, to feel something familiar about the surroundings. So you don't replace the ventilator with an xylophone or something, but the paintings on the wall and the trappings are kindergarten trappings. So it is, you know, especially, and that's why if you're a therapist who looks Hamish, if you throw in Yiddish words, if your demeanor is I gotta catch mincha soon, it makes the person feel comfortable. For women, we'll figure out something else. You'll tell them the challah, the something, or the left. Or, you know, we'll figure something else out.
You also say, I got to catch mincha soon.
Yes. Could you just?
I think what the Rosh Hashiva was saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that in therapy and hypnotherapy, there's something called pacing, and pacing refers to a process where, at first, the therapist follows the patient. You follow their breathing. If you're doing a trance, you follow their lashon. You use similar. You want to use their language.
Right.
Once you go with them, then you converge. It's like, I guess, turning a boat or something. You've got to go with their momentum.
Correct.
And then, you know, if there's something maybe a misfrumkeit-wise, to put it in a general way, depending on where they are, if they felt like you're with them and you're not judging, then there's room to subtly maybe bring something in, as long as they don't feel like you've lost.
Correct. And so in as much as it's making, and I would like to do it with the trappings, how you look, the words you drop, the things you do, you know, to take them to. Yes. I'm sorry. What's your name? Yeah.
Right, Rick the Whipper. Okay, I'd like to ask Rosh Hashiva, look at a different question. Till now I've been hearing, people have been asking more about in the area of intervention. My question is in the area of assessment and conceptualization. What if there is a serious conflict with dichotomy with the way the Rav, the Das Torah, perceives the actual pathology and the way the mental health person fully to perceive it. For example, I can't remember your name, he was speaking about basically clients' right to self-determination. I'm so glad I have rid myself of social anxiety. Yay, I will speak during careers of terror, which is awesome. That is an intervention question. My question is, if the therapist perceives the problem not as pathology in pure empirically evidence social science. The Rav says this is not pathology, this he is a chayter. So we have a clear, we're going in two different paths.
So,
but they're both from,
right.
And the client is from. Why is that important? If you don't get the initial conceptualization of who you are looking at, that is what drives the intervention. And in terms of whether we can use Mamari Chazal and all that, personally, I was a former seminary teacher. I actually shy away from that because we are a community that's populated with Rabbonim and Mechankois and Mechanechat. They're not coming to me for a Musa Shmos. They're coming to me to clear themselves from the mental health realm. So here's, am I clear with my question? In terms of the conceptualization,
so,
I'm before the intervention.
So now the question, we're dealing with a real human situation. Here you have a balabas whose Rav is telling him X, and you think it's off mark. So the question really is, why they're coming? You do not want to, in order to be successful, you cannot wedge yourself between him and his Rav. Besides the halachic, you know, besides that area, it also is the problem of, it'll be highly infective and probably exacerbate the problem, one direction or the other. It takes some diplomacy to explain that the Rav is right, but I will help you techniques that will get you to doing what's right. It needs a lot of diplomacy. And it really depends how aggressive the Rav personality is, how much he takes issue with the effects on the undercutting. The worst case scenario, obviously, is when you have a husband and a wife, and one is going to the Rav and one is going to the professional. Lord help you. I could just be a spallow.
What about a person who doesn't really care what the Rav says? I am in mental anguish.
So that person is not speaking to the Rav.
No.
And one person, I had a story, Purim, many years ago. I used to commute back from Eretz Yisrael until my family moved. And there was a boy there in Eretz Yisrael who had come from my area, very driven to succeed. wasn't succeeding, but driving himself crazy. At one point, he was drunk, and he asked me, I wasn't quite firm enough for him. He had moved way to the right. But whatever, we were friendly, and he came, Purim was high, and he said, is it not true a person can be anything he wants? The first one's a villain guy, and he can be a villain guy. I said, I don't believe it's true. He says, what do you mean? Everybody says, I said, true, but I don't know where that ever says. It doesn't say, it says every person can be perfect. Perfect means 100% of yourself, you've used right. But that a person can pick somebody and say that I could be like him, it doesn't say any place, and I don't believe it's true. So he got very upset and he says, who are you? I should listen to you. So I told him, because you asked me and you knew what the answer would be. And he turned, he like was stunned, even drunk. He knew, I said, you know, I'm not your favorite guddle. And you know darn well why you asked me that question. And it's interesting. Many years later, he's come to senses. But it was a long and hard process. I'm serious. He was a person with a lot of fire and a lot of fury. And things, you know, Baruch Hashem, those are really rough situations. That's why working, the ideal is, and one of the things I would like to propose, and I know that somebody in YU told me he's working on it, and he's done it. I don't know, I mean, if Rabbanim were able to take a seminar, you know, like a few days, a few weeks, it would have to be in a situation where they would go off on a tree or something. I know many Rabbanim will not touch it, that's fine. But if you build a cadre of young Rabbanim where you get, you know, a week's course in identifying this, this, and this, understanding the goal of it is not to become, you're not going to. But understand, just like when you're paskening Shailos and Yom Kippur, you want to understand sugar level, you want to understand kidney function, liver function. You want to understand, so when a doctor says this and this, you know what is being said. I believe it's something, and it has gone delicately. There's a lot of resistance, and I understand it. I understand the clash, the potential clash. But I think if Rabbanim were given the chance to learn and understand the vocabulary, the general ideas of personality disorders, the idea of communication, at least just the thing, I think that would be a great help, especially if you show the cases, and people, if the environment is right and the people presenting it are coming, echad, you know, I'm one of you, instead of I'm teaching you ignorant heathens, you know, how to do things, I think it would be a tellus, lot. Yes, what's your name, sir? No, whoever, no, she.
I want to thank the Rosh Yeshiva. I need clarity.
We all do. That, you know, as a, yeah.
I want to say, am I an American Jew or a Jewish American? Am I a Jewish therapist or a therapist who's Jewish? We can talk all night, but we're not allowed to be Maseiah Ledvea.
Right.
And with the winds of society and alternative lifestyles blowing the way they are, I see people in the listservs grappling with it too. What are things that are clearly not in our realm because we are Jewish therapists? And honestly speaking, not only does the client have the four levels, but as therapists we do too. And I don't see how I could bring my best to the client if I'm not me. Most of the research has shown that the effectiveness of treatment has much less to do with the kind of treatment than the kesher between than the relationship itself. And if I'm closing off very vital, integral parts of myself, first of all, I'm not who I could be or I should be, even in the room. And I think, you know, the gray areas we can discuss, you know, forever, but what is the area where we need to hear Das Torah that we, with all due respect to our profession, are not allowed to touch?
So, I would say something that the purpose is to validate something wrong is going to be usher. In other words, let's take something like, you know, with the, you know, gay lifestyle and so on. You can help a person cope with life, but you at the end of the day, nothing about what you say can validate it. You can say a person needs to be honest with yourself, You need to understand yourself. And the tricky part here is because if you're sitting in a room with a professional shingle, you've got restrictions as far as the profession goes. And that's why on that level, you may just have to say, you know, and the best excuse is to use, I've got a lot of my own sense of things and I don't think I'm a person who can help you. But let's say you're dealing with helping a person. Let's put it not in the profession, but you know somebody's struggling. You can say, listen, I can help you work towards what's good and what's right. Understand yourself. Nothing that you are is bad. It's only what we make of it, which is true by all stands. But if you feel that at the end of it, you are helping a person become a Chal Shabbos. Let's take an example. Somebody was brought up in a frum home that was very abusive, very, very restrictive, very, very tyrannical, and he wants to rebel. So to tell him, I'll help liberate you as such, and Bez Hashem, when we get through, you could be Chal Shabbos if you want. We can't do it, and you won't be able to do it with a full heart either. What you can say is, you know, once we learn how to be ourselves and free, you'll be able to make some real choices and you'll be surprised at yourself, some of the choices you'll make, something along those lines, which I think is the right way to deal with these things. But, you know, each case, you need to ask somebody who understands roughly the situation and can say, this is a case that you can't touch or you can. You know, they're not always clear-cut answers. I mean, I'll tell you some of the worst cases are, I think, where you have parents that loggerhead with children, and you think, this child might need to break with his parents totally. Those are really, you know, there you're walking on a real tightrope. Some of the other ones, it's easier to identify the isser, easier to identify the problem. And sometimes you can walk a delicate line. If you can, you know, ein chachma vein tevuna. I have to believe that. I do believe that. It's so, yes.
Just what? To clarify a point there. So, as Rashida said, let's say in this case where the client is struggling with issues of sexuality. So obviously we're not pushing them in that direction. That being said, but if we are aware, if we know, well, the certainty that by us giving them their sense of self and the courage, that's going to lead directly to decisions that are connected to Torah. Is that one step removed from being the Sayel Dvaravera, which would allow us to do our work?
I'm not sure correctly, because I think that it's one step towards being able to make good decisions. As long as a person is being run by something he has no control over, he's not making any decisions. And whatever comes automatically will usually not be good. But if you help a person understand himself, being free to make your own decisions is the first step towards struggling with decisions. And the real, everyone, the only way you could be a Bocher Betov is if you're a Bocher. If you feel that way, and I do believe it's true, then it's not a Maseil Advar Ver. And yes, these are they're very, very difficult Shilas. A lot of them depend each one on each nuanced case. But I don't believe we can't be too from either, because many people will be helped only when they realize it. They don't have to do what their parents are telling them to do. They don't have to do it. But then they can actually make good decisions, you know. But it's a process. I deal with sometimes we have kids who come to us in yeshiva, especially Israeli American kids who were forced into a system that was not for them at an age that was not appropriate, and they're rebellious, and sometimes you give a lot of leash. And then you sit down with a person and say, okay, tell me what you want in life. Tell me what it is that your values, your ideals. I want to help you fulfill them. You know, at a certain age, you know, if they're semi-adults, if they're 18, 19, 20, you get some extremely good results. One boy told me, there was one boy I encouraged to leave full-time yeshiva and to take a job. I just felt it's the right thing for him. And I said, feel free to be part of the yeshiva. You're part of the yeshiva. But you're not eating and sleeping off the yeshiva. You're eating of your own. And this person actually does a lot better. A lot, lot better in every way. And I, a few weeks ago, I said to him, so how are things going? He said, you know, I'm doing everything I did, but I'm doing because I want to do it and because I know it's right. And the person was profoundly changed. You know, he took responsibility for his life. It empowered him and it empowered him to do right. So I do think the step of helping a person understand himself and freeing himself from external pressures that add nothing to him is helpful. But your end goal has to be that, you know, he goes towards right. Yes. I only see it by Skype, yeah.
So I know actually I called a shoot about this a few months ago. A lot of the therapy methods are like based on almost quasi-religious concepts. So I spoke to Shiva when I did IFS about the concept of self. In DBT they call it wise mind. So here it's kind of mixing between the ruach and the nefesh, where we're building ourselves well. The concept I spoke to Shiva, she was talking about the neshama and the self and then
right.
The Paris. So that's a case where it's kind of overlapping and it's kind of part of therapy because a lot of therapies build off that kayak. So, you know, she was making a very big distinction between ruach and nefesh, but here's kind of a mix where we're going to the ruach almost, we're basically going to the ruach, we're going to the neshama to build to the nefesh. So how do we separate it on a professional level? And is it okay to bring that in? For example, I asked Rashid for myself, but even just to bring it into client and say, yes, you have a neshama and you can build up the neshama and to use that concept in therapy.
Well, the truth is, even at the nefesh level, you can build. The nefesh level includes basic, healthy, emotional sense of things. We can use our higher self, our chosen self, to put those blocks into place. But what we're doing is, we're working. So there's a self, listen, when I come to the doctor and I say I'm not feeling well, I'm not talking about existential philosophy. I'm talking about a stomachache. And that's fine. And that's the eye. When I'm at the doctor's office, at least the internist, the eye is my heart, my lungs, and my kishkes. That's the eye. When I'm in therapist's office, the eye is the basic sense of emotional well-being. When I'm sitting in base medrash, the eye is the neshama that's a chelek ha'chayim mimal. So using it in its context, I think, is appropriate. Because there is that self, you know, there is the sense of self that a child has, which is how much love, respect, hurt, humiliation, and things like that.
But again, in a lot of these therapies, the idea is that there's a pure place, like I put the shiva then, like the idea of my best is that there's a place that's always confident, that's always calm, and has all their ETs that they have, but a very strong place, and I know she identified that in the shambha when I spoke to him,
But I think when you're dealing with a client, you can talk about Akash Baruch Hu created, it says Elkim Baris Adam Yosher, Vehemu Biksha Khajbonos Harbei. You can say that is true. Listen, a normal child is born just like a normal body is healthy, with some exceptions, but a normal body is healthy and it's our donuts that mess it up usually, or whatever it is that we do or don't do, or the disease. A person's emotional sense is supposed to be well. It may have been different areas that distorted it and caused it to become very distorted and stressed and pain. So there's nothing wrong if you translate it. And you're talking about that level is bedrock. You cannot build anything up. And there's nothing wrong with talking about the self of the nefesh. It's true that the real, real, real self is there, but we're dealing with this, and this is just like a doctor says, the Rambam in Hilchos Deos has a perek about physical health. And I once heard from my Rebbe Moshe Shapiro, he asked, why did the Rambam insert it there? So I know it's good advice, I mean, you know, in based on these, but why? And the Rambam starts by saying, since you can't be over the Hashem when the body is sick, therefore I'm giving you advice. So he added a twist to it that was extremely, really a fine thing. Let's say somebody whose foot is broken can't walk, obviously. But someone who has physical pain, his mind automatically jumps to self, and he's not interested in God of Avodas Hashem. Whenever you have hurt in the body, illness, your mind wraps itself around itself. So the Rambam is not talking only about, well, obviously, if you're dead, you're not going to go to Hashem. If your hand is broken, you can put on tefillin. The Rambam is talking about the psychological effect of having of being ill. It becomes all consuming. So it's perfectly appropriate to speak about it, and this is the world you're dealing with. Yes. What's your name? Sorry.
Hanav Krohn. Coming from the opposite side of the question, where I'm born and bred, whatever. I've been in Lakewood Yeshiva, learned there in Kotel for many years, and I'm dealing with from people coming out of, you know, especially Gavoya. A lot of Torah comes into the conversation, especially with OCD, of course, on a professional, you know, with boundary. Coming from that end, and Baruch Hashem, I think it's going well. Is there anything that I should not be talking about as a therapist?
Give me some examples that you have a minus, like, as I know what we're talking about. Yeah.
Well, the OCD question, Bechira, there's a big question that keeps on coming up. What does it mean? Call Afad Nechwa, Mechupasa Shachaveri. You know, how's their hope in El Mabba? If everyone's going to be burned somehow. Different, like, Musar Shailas that come up.
So I would say, Olam Haba is not Yotchum. You know, it's somebody once said, Rabbi Yankel Galinsky was a big letz, and he was very humorous. So he once said that he was sitting at a bar mitzvah in Bnei Brak, and there was a big mizrach, a lot of rabbanim, and Dr. Rochelson, who was a tzaddik ador, walked in, and they immediately shooed off one of the rabbanim and gave him a seat up front. So he was very, very upset. Then he got up and he said, you know, the host did right, because it says that a rav is more that if you have a lost object of yours versus a lost object of your father's, you first return the lost object of your Rav, your Rebbe, because your father gave you life, brought you life in this world, and your Rebbe brings you life in the world to come. So he said, so that's the reason why we should mechabed a Rav, Rebbe, more than anybody else. But today's doctors also help bring you to Olam Haba. So that's why it's appropriate to respect. It's like, you know, in Hebrew, it sounded cute. I don't think you should concern yourself. You should tell him, Gan Eden, Bechir Olam Haba, Tzribayin Shalom's. And you know, this person that I was telling you about, that had told me that he's into this, so what is Hashem, what is it? I said, I don't know. Hashem wants you to roll up your sleeves and do what it takes to get better. How he runs his shop and what's his chayim, what's the oynish, how he says his death, really, it's none of our business. And I really couldn't care less. I said, it's great when we're sitting, not lemaisa, but and we talk about understanding the idea. Right now, all of that conversation will take you away from it. And I think that's something to keep on. Rev Leib Shteyman, this is a bit of an aside story, but I think it's very apropos. Rev Leib Shteyman, as big as a tzaddik he was, not as big because he was a big tzaddik, the one thing he hated more than anything else was nonsense. And Fruma nonsense was worse than regular nonsense. So he was once sitting, and a couple came to him. They had gotten a little bit of money in, and the wife, they wanted to paint the house, paint, you know, do some basic whatever needed to. But then she reminded herself of the Medrash that says that, you know, this woman asked for money and a golden leg came down, and then they had a dream that the table is missing a golden leg in Olam Haba. So she's very concerned, will this money mean we're missing the golden leg in Olam Haba? He said, amazing, he said. A 95-year-old man is sitting here, trembling of the Gehenim he's about to get. And Baruch Hashem, the couple's today worried about the golden legs on the table and gonna eat. You know, he didn't like I think people just say, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fair and he's emes. That's, we know, and that's a given, and we can be confident of that. He's, you know, Ikela Muna, and that's it. What we need to do, let me tell you how to roll up the sleeves and do it. And any other talk is a distraction. I think that's that. I would stay away from philosophical questions. Yeah, please.
Let's say this person is specifically asking, he said he feels he lost his Bechira, because of, you know, if things became very easy for him, and he's OCDing about that. And I tell him it's total nonsense, it's OCD thinking, we're not even going to go there. But he just keeps on going. He said, how do you know? So maybe it's just a trap. But I want to bring in a little hashkafa, like, we know this. Like, you know, we know that there's no such thing as losing Bavira unless you're power, you know?
But you know what? Arguing from Medrashim. What? Right. I think if you tell a person, listen. If I can tell you the facts are that people in your situation have been able to turn their lives around. So I don't know, maybe you know what's in Shemayim. I know what's in Aretz. I've met many people like you. I've seen them. I've read about it. What you can do is get back your Bechira. And I'm dealing with the facts of it, not the fantasy of it. I think you need...
So just going back to the separate levels and the separate roles. So one could conceive, as folks, you know, there's a shita that any moral failure is, at its essence, a mental health issue. That to do wrong indicates some kind of chisaron in mental health.
So I would beg to differ on that very strongly, and I'll explain to you why. And I don't want to go into philosophy as such, intimate. But let me. I want to spend a few minutes to help understand, to me, one of the most compelling, I don't like the word arguments or proofs, one of the most compelling thought process about Ruchnis is as follows. When we speak about good and bad, so definition one is a personal sensation. Chocolate cake, I find to be extremely good. Vanilla, not. You would think differently. You would think differently. And all I'm saying is my taste buds are delighted with this. So the when I say that this is good or nice, I find this to be nice decorations. Some people don't find nice decorations. Those are individual. They're expressing a personal sensation experience. There's good and bad that's objective. For instance, the quickest way to get from here to Flatbush, you can sit and have different arguments. We take out the ways. Machria, the Das Torah of ways, says the quickest way is to go through Manhattan. So okay, so that's what the GPS used to do. So that's an objective fact, and we understand that. If I come along and I tell somebody, the best career that you can choose is being a doctor. So what I mean to say is you have an affinity for X, Y, and Z. The thing you'll be best at that will give you the most earnings, this and this. Then it takes on meaning. So we have personal experience, which is subjective and real. It's personal. We have efficiency to get from point A to point B. That's objective and also real. When someone comes along and says stealing is bad, so when somebody says it's bad for society, yeah, but so is going in an airplane. No, we'd say it's criminal. The word criminal, evil. The word evil. Honestly speaking, even the biggest atheist, unless he's a psychopath, has a strong sense of it. And there is no way to translate that sense into one of the other two. Psychology should be dealing with the second category or the first. In other words, a person who has unnatural pressures on him, stresses, whether they're by parents, society, mixing up the goals that he could possibly attain, all that, is a person who is not going to be functioning efficiently and is a person who will be suffering. So we come along and say, listen, you have a fantasy to be a great football player, that's you'll never be one, and therefore you never realize happiness and so forth. When I come along and tell you that stealing is evil, and I always give a mushroom, and I think I'm particularly scared of heights. You know, not I don't mind a high floor, but standing on a ladder doesn't make me feel good. So Baruch Hashem, I have a supply of Bochum that always changes the light bulbs, and it doesn't hamper my life a lot. If somebody would come along on a Sunday afternoon and say, you know, you're not doing much anyway, I'll give you a 3-hour session on how to scale heights, and you'll be able to shinny up a pole with no problems. I would be, I'd ask him if he takes insurance, and if he says yes, I'd be pretty happy to do it. Let's say a guy asks me, you know, how come you pay all your taxes like a little tatala? How come you don't just that you can this and that? I don't know. I said, I do it that way. I said, you know what? It's a hang-up. I can give you a 3-hour session, and you'll be declaring $1,000 a year earnings. Even an atheist, if he's a good, decent person, so let's say not taxes, but let's say, you know, something that everyone would consider criminal, you wouldn't do it. Why? It's another value that is not in the system, it's from outside the system. The conscience we have is a feeler for values that are not of this world. And when some counselor says it's not good for society when you take and give bribes, the honest truth, I don't care that much about society. Yes, it's nice society is running well, but if I can make a few million dollars, I don't so much care about society. The answer is, but I feel evil and good and noble. It's sacrificing for somebody, courage, all the positive values comes from somewhere else. So I don't think that's true. It's the reason why moral failures means it doesn't correspond to something outside this world, which affects us. A person who steals, I once read a lawyer said, a white collar crime's punishment is on the witness stand, not in jail. When this person was considered to be Mr. Good himself, sits on witness stand and he's shown up for the years, he's dead. It destroys people. More than the jail sentence. Jail sentence is already achamaisa. So that is one area that can have an effect on a person. But it's very different than basic mental health, which is internal functioning. You know, if we try to attain goals that are not achievable for us, what we'll do is keep on intensifying our suffering. So I do think that demarcation is important.
I think there's a very good difference.
Yeah.
That when you could frame every violation of a Torah value, if you have that Torah value and you're violating it, it's a mental illness. Because why are you acting out against your value?
So, it depends how you. Well, but not really, because it depends how you define mental illness. I mean, there are values. When somebody cuts corners in paying taxes, it could call that mental illness. It's you know, it's a different tchum, and I'd like to keep those tchumim apart.
Can I sharpen the question?
Please.
So let's say you have, for example, a person engaging in some kind of bad behavior, and you know, like most of us walking this planet, they have issues.
Yeah.
So, but they're not extreme, right? If they're extreme, if this person was horribly abused, so of course, you know, you understand that the error is somewhat related to the horrible experience. But
right.
They're normal. Difficulties. So, is this person suffering from their difficulties that it will then free them from the Avera? Or are they just someone who needs to be told stop doing the Avera?
That depends on the situation. Yes, please. Please. Okay, yes.
So, what is the Ruach? Is that part of the Ruach? Here's the exact same question of what is causing that? How do we see that? And how, as from therapists, do we make the dichotomy that maybe we shouldn't?
So let's take an example. So again, we'll touch on. So imagine somebody is complaining of having improper hihurim. He's gotten into a particular affair with somebody that he shouldn't. So that would fall under a category of Avera, Ruach Shtus, etc., etc. But a person has been womanizing for years. A person is out of control. So at some point, it becomes a mental health issue because it's addictive behavior. And you know, it's like eating. Sometimes it's easy to tell, you know, a person who's overeating by a few donuts a year, and he's putting down 2-3 pounds a year, we wouldn't call it a mental health issue, but we would give him counseling on techniques how to move away. But a person who hasn't seen a kiddush that he hasn't liked, and he's really, you know, there's something a lot more than he's something has become twisted, and now we have to deal with it as a mental health issue. So you know, it is a fine. It's like there's a cold and pneumonia. At some point,
Is it a difference in essence or a difference in degree?
So I believe once it's crossed over, a person's bechira might be compromised. He certainly doesn't have the tools. So, I mean, he has the bechira. And Arad Gadol once told me something extraordinary. It was many years ago. I was a bacha yet. This is somebody in Nebrak. He told me, don't think that you can ever hide behind Das Torah. You chose to follow Das Torah, and you chose the Gadol who's going to be your Das Torah. He wasn't telling it to me it was an argument. It was just giving me his take on things. When the bechira person has, when he's become addicted, is to look for help and to surrender whatever he needs to surrender to get over it. So his bechira is not, he's not going to be able to stop drinking on his own. But if he knows that he needs a rehab, and that's at that level, he can still do that. So his bechira is to take a step that's very difficult. He knows there's going to be difficulties. Maybe he's embarrassed, etc. But taking that step will work for him. Yes?
Clarify. I mean, there's a widely taught theory, anyway, at least in the FRM programs, that nobody goes off the derech, for instance, if they're not being driven by strong emotional distress. And so for mental professionals, many of them view it primarily as a mental health issue. Adolescents, adults going off the derech. So is there a mixture of both? Do we have to assume that? Is there such a thing as people, is there Yetzer Hara?
Like most things, I would assume it's a mixture of both. And I'll tell you, let's take an example. Imagine a person who never connected to Yiddishkeit. He was in yeshiva. He walked the walk, talk. Learning to turn him on. He never heard a Musa Shmuzer turn him on. But he's there. He's from. It's fine and it's good. And then he goes on, and you know he once nibbles on cookies without a heksha, but it's probably okay. He nibbles this. He does that. And there's a slow disintegration of his frumkeit. That off the derech doesn't—it's a lack of emotional connection rather than a positive emotional drive. On the other hand, I was speaking to somebody. This is going a few years back. This person was a huge Talmud Chacham. He wrote Sfarim Kabbalah. Totally fried with family and children, the works. And someone called me up and said, again, I don't know how I got, but I said, you know, it's just that. He has questions. He has a few questions. If you can answer them, this and that. I said, listen, I feel obligated to help if you're calling me, but let me tell you something. It has nothing, I assure you, it has nothing to do with questions. But I'll be in New York. I'll speak with the person if you want. So fine. So I happened to be in New York. I came in. I met this person. I sat a few hours with him. This person spent hours raging. It wasn't questions. It was a lot of anger and rage. And we spoke a bunch of hours. And I let him do the most of the talking. I was listening. And this, that. And then threw in all the questions, the questions, we don't find mention Chanukah, all the questions and this and that. This person is very bright. I know he wrote Sfarim Kabbalah. When he finished, I said, listen, I'm not God's salesman. I don't make a commission on the people who make fun of it. I want to tell you something. If mentally you would have believed that this is fairy tales, after 10 minutes of conversation, you would have put your arm around me and you would have said, Rabbi, get a life. I'm telling you, don't waste your time. You don't know how great cheeseburgers are. You don't know how great this is. Get a life. I don't want to talk about it. I said, I've been listening to a few hours of real anger. I said, something hurts terribly bad. You're not going to have a life unless you resolve those issues, whatever they are. I mean, this person's on drugs. This person is in other places. He was a very angry... Let me share a story to show what a great Baal Musa who had tremendous insight in people said. It's an awesome story. It's my wife's great-grandfather, the Altus Labotka. I didn't know it from the film. I actually read this recently by a Talmud of his, and the story blew me away. The Alter was an extraordinarily perceptive person. His insight in human nature was beyond. He was head of Slabodka Yeshiva, and again, some of you might know a lot about this, some might know very little, in the most turbulent kufa in Jewish history. This was from the late 1800s to 1880. He founded the yeshiva until 1925 when he moved to Israel. This was when yeshivas were destroyed, torn apart, disintegrated. Communism, Zionism, socialism, anti-religious, assimilation, everything took, and Bachram would just leave. And, you know, people say, well, we have a terrible off-the-derech problem. Today, off-the-derech is they go off someplace on a path their own to munch on a cheeseburger. In those days, they took a bulldozer and destroyed the yeshiva. It's a whole different world. You know, they were lishma. Today's are like l'teyava. So one day, so every so often, there'd be a revolt of Bachram. And Bachram would just unmask it up. And one day, the best Bachram yeshiva, the biggest masmina learner, came in with a group of people screaming and yelling profanities and vulgarisms and yelling at the altar, on and on, screaming. And they smashed and it was like a pogrom. And they walked out on masmina yeshiva. The altar was one of Khan's people. He turned to this person right in the story. It's Rabbi Meskin or Mersky. And he said to him, did you see how this leader kept his intellectual integrity despite the fact that he's left the yeshiva? I said, look at him, says, what are you talking about? He said, take a look. He came in and screaming and yelling in high pitch, high revved emotion from beginning to the end. You know why? Because if he would have to think calmly and clearly, he couldn't say these things and he couldn't put his position. The only way it worked is he got his anger and his emotions to talk, not his mind, because his mind couldn't do it. That's insight in a person. But you know, many of the people are frustrated, hurt, upset. You find people who leave by the process of dilution and sort of, you know, but that's a slow process. The person not interested in arguing, the person wants just, you know, it's kind of a slow disintegration. A person who comes with a tremendous, you know, explosion, something caused it. It could be he was always looked down upon. It could be that you know, sexual abuse is a big factor in a lot of it. It could be frustration and other things like that, hemmed in by people, an unhappy marriage, a difficult parent. Could be many things like that, but I believe many of them. The slow process where we sort of slowly dilute our way out of place, so unfortunately is a big thing, but it's just not so noticeable. Maybe one or two more questions and that's it. Yes. Robin. Yeah.
If you're dealing with a woman with OCD and there are lots of shaylos coming up, you know, mikvah, bedikas, kashrus, is it okay for a therapist to give over, like, I've asked the shayla for people with OCD, I've been told X? Because sometimes if you tell the person to go to their own room, and they're a person who's not familiar with OCD, they totally...
Right.
So are you allowed to take that responsibility of, you know, telling them a general sack?
I think most helpful, the best idea would be, and I think for both reasons, both halachic and professional, to work with a rav. And the way you couch it to the person is, this rav has a lot of expertise in these shaila specifically. Don't tell him that he recognizes OCD when he sees it. Tell him that in this particular area, you know, it's healthy because down deep, the person knows that they trusted you and not a rav, mm-hmm. They're not going to free themselves from thinking that they took a shortcut. Mm-hmm. So working, and that's why it's important to have, you know, my fantasy or my dream would be to have groups of rabbanim would work with this closely, mm-hmm. because you know it's you need both ends of it to be effective. So in a case like yours, working with a rav was telling, and again, the for this person, say this person has exact, most rabbanim, they don't have such expertise in this, so they're machmimo, but he knows exactly, and he can tell you. that's the, you know, that's probably the best way to do it. Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. And one more question, maybe?
I get the last question.
So if she'll ask the question, then you can ask the last question, okay? I'm sorry, would you?
Okay, based on some...
Oh, you would you? Yeah.
Based on some of the conversation that we were having before, I just really want clarification. There are a lot of times that I'm interacting with the desk of a specific client, because I'm always working with their desk term. And an issue that will come up, particularly when I'm dealing with personality disorders, is that a lack of understanding what it is and a conceptualization is what we're seeing as midas. We are looking at that midas, the person needs to be directed on midas.
Right.
And so this builds on something that we've been talking about. I'm usually saying, first of all, we need to nasa odomi. There has to be some...
That's what Revolba calls that chapter Adam. He says, if you're not an Adam, then there's nothing to talk about. And he implies that level of Adam is a therapist issue, not a halachic or a midas issue. Yes, continue, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, as therapists, we are grappling with this. We are often called upon to make that distinction. And I'm saying the fear is someplace there, right? You know, does this person have the capacity to make a choice? Or are they trapped by whether it's early childhood experiences, whether it's something they were born with, traumas? But that's kind of an issue where I try to make sense for us to say, we don't really know. What we're talking about, people are going out and making certain behaviors based on ways that we're helping them. How would we clarify to say, this is a nasa of an issue that comes before the Hashemite? Because our purview is only in the nasa of an issue. Where does this end? Where does this begin?
Well, you can, you know, there are tools to diagnose certain things. In other words, personality disorders. One of the challenges of generally mental health is they're not as quantifiable. You can't take a blood and send it down to the lab. So it's always going to be a judgment call. You know, to some degree, there are symptoms. You know, you can build a picture, but... once something falls under something like personality disorder, that's nothing to do with midos. It's not easily controllable. Those are things that can be only controlled from somebody from the outside. I'm working on compensating for whatever issue you have. And the problem starts when a rav gets involved. And a lot of times you get this, and the real gehenim is when you have a spouse and one person says, my wife has a personality disorder. And the other, and the rub of her or whatever it is saying, what are you talking about? You know, and a person who doesn't understand these things. And there's somebody, Dr. Levitz, who's written, he gives Y courses in YU, and he wrote a book on rabbinical counseling, pastoral counseling, rabbinical counseling. And he writes there, I'm not writing this as a textbook for Rabbanim to be therapists. They're not supposed to be therapists. They, you know, it's two separate. But they should know that certain balabatim they suffer from, it's not their problem, it's a balabas's problem. And if the balabas has, you know, seriously, sometimes you get a person very friendly and is so nice, and all of a sudden got very angry at me. Oy vey, what did I say? What did I do? And you have to realize at some point you just say, you know what? No, this person has a disorder, and now I have to deal with it very differently. Having helpful rabbinic guidance so that the person, you know, understands that this is what it is vital in a lot of these cases. Because you're right, it gets written off as bad midos, and it's nothing to do with midos. It has to do with how the hardware, it's not the software program you put in, it's the hardware program. Yeah. Maybe let me mention one more issue that I think is a point of conflict, and I think why it's important to mention it. So, you know, we're speaking about the sexuality things. I think there's another issue, marriage. The current, when I was growing up, the Weltanschauung and the commonly held moral view was that family is sacrosanct. Being married, if you're not married, you're missing something, you're not Adam. And you know, you sacrifice everything for your wife and children, husband, children, so on and so forth. That was sort of common between everybody. Today, everything is about a person. You are you. some people enjoy marriage, some people don't enjoy marriage, some marriages are more pleasant than not being married, some marriages are less pleasant than not being married. Children, okay, we try to do best, but at the end, so on and so forth. Now, that is, and I've known from a fairly close experience where a scenario as follows. A woman was married. The husband was not abusive by everybody's count. The husband was of a different nature than the woman. The woman was very artistic and very different. He couldn't relate to many parts of her. They'd been married for, I don't know, probably a decade, two children. There was a lot of pleasantness, but you know, there were deep-seated areas where the woman felt he just didn't get her. Somebody who was from therapist explained to her that she's, you know, just she's being forced in. She got divorced, and so the two children. It's, so 4 years later, and people tried to dissuade her. This was not so. I know a lot of details. 4 years later, 5 years later, he's remarried happily. She wrote a letter that she is unhappy. She thought it'd be easy to find a father figure for children. She doesn't. I mean, they have an amicable relationship. It's not, you know, none of the negative parts there. And she basically says, I buried myself. The Rav in our town, Rabbi Einema Zechanei Vracha, was a Rav 50 years. A very smart, a very shrewd person. He said he tried to dissuade every woman, and what's left over is our children. And if our children cannot forgive us, and they don't, and forgive us, then, so if it's my pikuach nefesh, I don't mean, okay, but if it's happier and less happy, there's a long stretch where I think today we disagree very much with it. On the firm side, I think we have not understood abuse enough, abuse of marriage, abuse of spouse, and how serious it can be, whether it's emotional, severe emotional abuse or physical abuse. So I think we've been guilty of that. But I think the world's idea where it's just another way to live life is totally alien to our values. Yes, what did you got the list?
Yeah, one quick comment and a question. I have eight questions here. Prepared. This is a conversation I followed from the first question, so I'm hoping that she will give us other occasions that we can.
If the Olin feels it's helpful, I do come to New York on some occasions. My son Yaakov knows when. So I'm serious. He's the organized one. So you can.
So hopefully we can have I'm hoping that the Rishiva could conclude just with words of chizuk for those who are immersed in the service of Kali Yisrael.
I'll leave you with something that my mother-in-law, I don't know if you, my mother was Reb Zafinkel, if anybody was not Tisol, you probably had an occasion to use her. She was a Greinemann. She was 24/7, sleeves rolled up in a sneeristic way, helping people all the time. She was like sort of like rock strong, and people with medical tsaros was especially, but everything in the books. One day a lady, I think it was a medical issue, they tried one thing, nothing. Finally, my mother-in-law said to her, you know, it was on the phone, I was sitting, she said, you know, I think I've tried every avenue, and I don't think there's anything more I could offer you. So the lady told the Rabbanit, you understand Hebrew, I mostly understand it. Yesh kol kach habe gemachim hayom. There's so many gemachs today. Gemach ozen ze meod chashuv. And you know, I was speaking to somebody once in Shabbos who's going through terrible tzara. Somebody, I don't know, it happened in the area in where I was. And at the end, I listened. And at the end, the person said, you know, it feels better. So it's the pain and the weight you feel when you hear another story and another story. As hard as it feels for you, in many ways, that's how much lighter you've made it for the person. And you know, I'm sure everybody feels it. A big part of it is when the person feels that you listen, and it's weighing down on you. Two people carrying something. It's strange to use emotional, you know, to conceptualize from physical character emotional, but it is like that. And that's what you do. And you know, it's something that, and Baruch Hashem, we do have better tools today. And Baruch Hashem, we do understand things, and we can help a lot of people more than that. But at least the fact that we're there and we're available, I think, you know, may it be that when you call to Hashem, Hashem will listen to Hashem. So that's the best thing. What? I don't mind. Your name again?
Sokar.
I see. Okay, so he has.
I had a bed.
Okay, question.